Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studio, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. And joining us now is Jonathan Hutton of Outkick's Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow, a little rebranded Outkick 360. Hutton, always appreciate you for joining us. Got to get your thoughts on the most recent report from Daniel Jeremiah on the Move the Sticks podcast. The Titans are exploring trading up for the third overall pick. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to do it, but let's say if they do, how would you feel about it, and how realistic do you really think it is that they're going to do that?
First of all, always enjoy coming on with you guys. If they do it, they are also, to me, moving Ryan Tannehill. I think if you have a quarterback that were to fall to you at 11, and that's not quite the fall, you can have the luxury of saying, you know what, this guy needs he's big on our board. We're having a luxury this season of having Tannehill ahead of him. Let's go. Again, I'm using the Chiefs model that I've brought up multiple times with you guys. However, if you're trading up from 11 to 3 to jump ahead of Indianapolis, who is quarterback needy, you're going to pay the price. And the price tag is going to mean that guy needs to start. That guy is your starting quarterback. You are definitive in that. No different than the top quarterbacks of years past. So I would say I'm all for it if they are sold on one specific player. But it's also interesting to me that the Panthers have already traded up to number one, and there's discussion now of Arizona at 3 before you really even know which quarterback is going to be there. And to me, that's, even though we think it could be Richardson, right? We think we know the two quarterbacks that are going 1 and 2. I still, there's so much uncertainty in the draft that, yeah, it's Arizona. They're the one team that doesn't need a quarterback in the top 5. But man, it is a roll of the dice if you're in love with one specific quarterback. And to move up to 3, it would have to be Richardson or Levis, because the thought is Stroud's going number 1, and all of us think we know that Bryce Young's going number 2.
Jonathan Hutton is with us. I've seen a whole lot of parody about Will Levis. The 33rd team had a mock draft coming out that had the Titans trading up to 3 to take Will Levis. And then we've seen mock drafts with Will Levis going as low as 14. Bruce Feldman's most recent mock draft has Will Levis going at 20. What do you make of Will
Levis? It has the Titans trading to get Will Levis at 20 after picking at number 11. So there's a lot of differing views. That's the interesting thing to me. Once you get past Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, I think there's a varying degree of opinions on the other guys.
No doubt. But this is also, to me, we are now getting back to the even area of Will Levis. Had we discussed Will Levis prior to Mel Kiper, for whatever reason, in January, calling him the number one player on his board, the headline wouldn't be that he's falling to, 15 or 20. I think he's around that range of an NFL quarterback in this draft, quite frankly. I like Will Levis. I don't think he's awful. I think he's a first-round pick. I just don't think he's a top-5 pick. And I think where we're seeing him mocked now, and as guys, close up shop on free agency and start talking to people about the draft and where they're coming to on their conclusions after meetings and in-person trips for Will Levis – I think this is about where he should go, quite frankly. And we always see the overreach at quarterback. I think Levis, if he goes top 10, that's the overreach in my mind right now before I see any trades on paper. I do think he's a top 20 type skill set. I don't think he's top 5. And Stroud and Young would be that for me. And then Richardson, you can make the argument based on the ceiling.
Now, Hutt, keeping on the theme with the quarterbacks now, you've mentioned Stroud and Bryce Young, and we all know those two guys, I think, are head of shoulders above anyone else in the draft when you're talking quarterbacks, because those guys, we've seen the talent on the field for a long period of time. We've seen what they can do on the field in their strength as well as their weaknesses, and we still deem those two the top two quarterbacks in this year's draft. Where does Hendon Hooker fall? Because I think he's going to end up, at least in my eyes, I think he's going to end up a late first-round guy And he might just turn out to be, I'm not going to say necessarily a steal of the draft, but where he's drafted and what he ends up doing, he's going to be gotten at a value.
Well, no question. And here's the other thing, Mace, and it ties into having a luxury of can you play someone else right now? I think he's, while all signs are everything's great, he's right on schedule. No one's ever behind schedule whenever they're rehabbing an injury. Everyone's either ahead of schedule or right on. And I've heard nothing to indicate that it's anything worse than what the original timetable was for Hendon Hooker. He thinks he's going to be on the field during training camp. But still, I mean, I think with him, you want the clock to move quickly because of his age. But if you draft him in the first round, you have the fifth-year option, and I think that's beneficial for a quarterback like him. And look, he's not the perfect quarterback, but he's in line with the group we're talking about, with Levis and Richardson. The one area I don't know how scouts specifically feel, how general managers on the league will feel about this, but you know he's got one of the highest sack rate on pressure of any of the five QBs. The best is actually Richardson, followed by Stroud and Bryce Young. All of them are 12% sack rate or less whenever they're pressured. And Hendon Hooker's at 26%, followed by Will Levis at nearly 30%. So there's a big drop-off there based on when teams brought the blitz. That indicates you don't necessarily need this guy to start in September. At worst, he is a great backup option for a team. At best, you need the fifth-year option because he's going to be your quarterback. And I think it's worth the investment based on the value of the position.
Now, looking at these receivers, there are some, mocks out there where the Titans take Jackson and Jigba with the 11th pick. Now, I think that's a little bit too rich and too high for this year's receiving class. But what you have seen from, say, the top two or three guys, whether it be Zay Flowers, Addison, Jackson, or Quentin Johnson, do you think this is a receiving class that warrants a top 10, top 15 pick?
No, I don't. Smith and Jigba, I mean, Mace, I don't know how you feel about this. It bothered me whenever he bowed out of the college football playoff. I don't know. The whole thing is strange. McShay had the report on him prior to bowl season about, if he was actually going to be hurt, quote unquote, injured for the bowl season. I don't know. The 2002 campaign for him started as he's probably the top wide receiver in college football. That was the vibe. Addison certainly has all these different qualities too. And then there's Quentin Johnson, who I really like, but then Georgia just shut him down with their defensive backs. So, and he's the tall, lanky guy who is going to get open, but I think a very specific type of receiver for an offense. And I think that's how I view the rest of this, the top end of the wide receivers here. It's very pick the guy that fits your offense and where you have the biggest hole more than it is. Here is the surefire wide receiver who can play any of the three positions on the field when you line up in 11 and can also do various roles for you throughout the offense with the football in his hands. Maybe there's one or two guys like that have shown that in college football, but I think they're all pretty defined on who they are.
And that's my problem, Hutt, with Njigba. As much as McShay may like him or other guys may like him and say, well, listen, this guy, he is a top 10, top 12 pick. But if you look at the numbers are great that he had the year prior, but 90% of his catches were from the slot. He's not a guy that you can line up at all three receiver positions. He's just not. And if I'm drafting a guy that high, I want to be able to stick him outside the whole game if I need to, or put him inside the whole game if I need to. And right now, he's clearly a slot receiver. And there's nothing wrong with that in today's game. But when you're drafting a guy that high, he has to be able to play multiple positions in the receiver room.
Right there with you. And I'm, while you're saying that, I went and pulled up the McShay quote. That, by the way, his family went back at McShay on this. But I think it's important because it was December the 7th when McShay said this. It wasn't right before the college football playoff. He was trying to determine whether or not Njigba was going to play. The quote was, there are a lot of reports from NFL scouts that I've talked to who say he's healthy enough to play. He's protecting himself for the draft. I got news for every prospect out there. NFL teams know. They know what you had for lunch last Thursday. They're going to know whether you're healthy or not. And if you're healthy enough to play, you need to be out there with your team and play. I would say, for the most part, I buy into that, especially if you're the college football playoff. I'm 100% behind that. That increases with the 12-team playoff, I think. I think we'll see more guys play because of the playoff aspect of the bowl. But for I don't want to rip on the guy if he actually was injured, and I don't blame him if he's, 90% and he doesn't want to play because he's going to be a top 10 pick or whatever they're telling him to be. But, man, I would have a hard time doing that, especially at that position, given the fact that we've seen time and time again, after 2.5 years, receivers want to bump in pay, and it becomes a big standoff.
More with Jonathan Hutton coming up next. It's Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. He's right. Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game in the Game Nashville app. Jonathan Hutton with Outkicks, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow joins us now. Hearing a lot about Hendon Hooker. Now, the Titans are scheduled to meet with Hendon Hooker this week. How much do you look into the meetings that the Titans have? Because this time last year, they met with Treylon Burks. They met with Malik Willis. But a lot of teams meet with a lot of guys. How much do you really look into the guys that the Titans are meeting with?
I think it makes a lot of sense for Hooker and the Titans to pair up here in this draft. I'll start by saying that. But keep in mind, all the meeting reports, like Hooker was the first player to meet with the Titans, or the Titans were the first team to meet with Hooker whenever Hooker was at the Senior Bowl. But he can meet with all 32, and all 32 should take the opportunity to chat with every single player there. There's not a limit on that. Combine, different story based on, of course, his knee. And based on location, this visit doesn't count against their number of visits that they can have in the facility because he's the in-state prospect. So they should use all avenues to chat with him and figure out everything, put him on the board, make sure he's a match with Kelly and everything else. But I read into the visits because, and especially the guys who are mocked to go like third to sixth round, because at that point, I think teams are more likely and high probability that they go with the player that matches who they are and the personality and the traits that fit the organization, the coaching staff, the head coach, the general manager, more so than the first or second round picks where, oh, he's the highest guy on our board. By the time the third round rolls around, you go all over the place with projections because it's very difficult to figure out which position of need meets the quality of the football player for that team. So the Titans, if you're looking into trying to read between the lines on Hendon Hooker, you're trying to determine, okay, if we draft at 11, what do we do? If we trade down, who can we get? Is Hendon Hooker our quarterback if we trade back into the first round for the fifth-year option? The Packers are exploring the same possibility with Hendon Hooker. So, yeah, I like the direction of what he could mean to the offense, but I think there's going to be a lot of teams that fall into the Hendon Hooker fan club for what he means on and off the field. And I think he helped himself a ton whenever they made the exception for him to go to the Senior Bowl, because while he couldn't play, they saw how he is on the sideline. They saw what he's like in practice. They saw how he interacted with the coaches. I think all of that is a huge benefit to him because the perception of some is he is in an offense that's the one read, Coach Heupel's in his headset telling him to play, all these different things. And I think he had to show, and he has shown, that he's more than just a one read quarterback and a system guy.
Jonathan Hutton is with us, and Hutt, I'm just curious your philosophy on how you read mock drafts. We had a fun discussion before. We tried to do an over-under on how many mock drafts Todd McShay will have between now and the actual draft. So he's got what? He's got one now, but you know it's going to change a lot, right? And you can find 25, 30 a day probably if you look at it. So how do you try to view those, and what kind of stock do you put in who's doing it?
I put a ton of stock in who's doing it. John McClain mocks the mock every year because but when he was with the Chronicle, and he openly missed this, he's like, I have 17 different mock drafts, and I'm going to have so-and-so taking a different player every time. You know, it's just part fun, part also he's admitting, like, no one really knows how this is going to go down. There's a lot of lying this time of year more than there is truth. So I think you have to remember that. Willie, I put stock into the guys that put out one mock draft, just like I do stock into the fans who have one bracket, right? Because that you're stuck to that. A guy that always comes to mind for me, and his mock draft is released like 7 or 8 days prior to, or maybe sooner than that now, is Charles Davis. Charles puts out his along with two or three others at NFL.com. And when I say two or three other analysts do the same. And I pay more attention to the guys who do it one time than 20 times, because at some point you can't just always link up the same headline with your mock draft if you're doing it since February. You have to have something that makes me, who I've already read the one mock draft from so-and-so, click on the link that says, oh, what's changed? I like it. I like trying to, you know, push down the road and see what teams are thinking. And a lot of times they're just going by position of need, and that's fine. But what we don't know is which of those teams are willing to trade back and settle on their second best option on their board because a quarterback needy team jumps up. All of the trades factor into the mocks, and that's what we don't know.
So if the Titans don't take a quarterback and they are sitting at 11, give me the two or three players that you're honing in on that you like the best.
Well, at that point, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think it's offensive line at that point, Willie, for me. I know that some of the mocks have the Titans going opposite offensive line for like the first couple of picks. I would have a hard time doing that. I would go best available player. And here's the other thing too. No one's talking about defense for them. They do have a pass rush need, and maybe I'm crazy, but if you're going with the best available player, one of those pass rushers at the top is going to be the best available player at 11, because I think we'll see an offensive lineman drafted. We'll see four quarterbacks potentially go by the time the Titans are on the clock at 11. More maneuvering if you have Will Anderson fall, and I say quote-unquote fall, past Indy at 4 or Seattle at 5. Again, there's so many different scenarios. Jalen Carter, where does he go in this draft based on the offseason? And then you add that into, well, where did people have him drafted prior to the offseason? Well, he was ahead of Will Anderson. He's the first defensive player taken.
All right, so Carter's an interesting one. So let's say he would fall to 11. How would you feel about that if you're the Titans?
Oh, I love it. I would view it like Jeffrey Simmons. And you get to pair those two together. I mean,
right. So if you do your homework and you say, look, he screwed up, right? He had a screw up, but that's not what we think his true character is. We know the Georgia thing hasn't exactly worked here in recent times with the first round picks. But if that's your assessment, you would have no trouble picking him at 11.
No trouble. And here's how he was described to me, and I think it's how you would describe Jeffrey Simmons. He is a grizzly bear. The Titans have a knack for wanting those players and finding those guys, especially on the defensive front. And Simmons is the example, but I'm going through not just this. I'm not even saying this coaching regime or this previous general manager. I just say, but and how they're built. I think, man, if he were to fall there, what a gift. And because he's not injured. So, I mean, I don't think he's there. I think a team's trading up for him. And I always use the trade up factor because I think he's valuable. I think that's how I value players. Would I trade up for him? Yes or no? He's a player that's on a short list of guys that you would do that for in this draft. And you would have a pretty good indication already on who he is, because he's not going to visit any other team other than a top 10 pick team. And I don't blame him, because I think we all agree he's a top 10 player, surefire.
Now, outside of Hyatt and Hooker for UT, who do you think is the next guy that would be on the draft board? Is it a Darnell Wright? Is it a Cedric Tillman or Brian Young? Which one of these guys do you think, if indeed Hyatt and Hooker goes first, not necessarily first in the first round, but
right,
first when you talk about UT players, who do you think goes next?
I think it's Darnell Wright. Mm-hmm. There are people out there, there are draft analysts out there who have Wright as the best pro tackle. Now, he's a right tackle, but they feel like he's the consistent guy, and they really like what he's done. I mean, Will Anderson had two games against Tennessee, the most recent two games against Tennessee, where it didn't go well. His stats are not – you watching the game against Tennessee earlier this year at Neyland, I didn't even – at one point I turn around, it's like the third or fourth quarter, I'm like, is Will Anderson playing in this game? Well, he's had games where he hasn't had pressures, at least one pressure, and Darnell Wright is both games. He's facing him both times, and Anderson glows whenever he talks about Darnell Wright. So I think Darnell Wright's the next off the board. And then, I mean, the receivers are interesting, because how do you, Mace, how mm-hmm. do you value Hyatt versus, you know, what you could get? And I don't mean the, a possession receiver that's going to move the chains, but Hyatt's probably going to be a game breaker for you in four or five games. Doesn't mean you win. But he's, I view Jalin Hyatt, because of his speed and his size, to me, he's the guy that's going to be 5 or 6 weeks out of the season really, really good. Mm-hmm. But then you also have options on the Tennessee roster and elsewhere of guys who are going to be very consistent for you week in and week out. And they'll give you 3 or 4 catches per week, maybe not the 10 catch, 200 yard receiving game with 2 touchdowns, but they'll have the consistency for you to help you move the chains. The speed always wins in this, and that's why you're right to mention Jalin Hyatt first.
Yeah, I'm sure he will go before Cedric Tillman, but I just like Cedric Tillman because he reminds me, and I can't think of his name right now, the kid from San Francisco that came out of UT that's playing in San Francisco now. Where you can put him at several different positions and you're still going to get production. Now, he's not going to be your frontline receiver like your number one guy, and yeah. I don't think Hyatt will either. But
you're talking about Jennings.
Yeah, right? Jennings. He reminds me more of a Jennings guy where you can put him anywhere on the field.
And was he drafted, Juwan Jennings?
Yeah, sixth round.
Sixth round. Okay, I knew it was right at the end. Mm-hmm.
So he reminds me more of a guy from a versatility standpoint, where you can put him anywhere on the field and you're going to get production out of him. I don't know if I see that with Hyatt. I think he's a straight line guy. There's a lot he still needs to learn about playing that position in the NFL.
Yeah, but I'm with you on that's a great comparison with Jennings. By the way, Jennings is a seventh round pick. That's crazy.
I love Juwan Jennings.
Yes,
I remember that draft winding down. And there were two guys that had not been picked. It was Juwan Jennings and the kid out of Vanderbilt was Lipscomb. What was his first name?
It's Elijah.
Elijah Lipscomb, who I thought was pretty darn good in college, but I don't think Lipscomb is still playing. And now Jennings has not only shown that he was worth being drafted, but quite a bit more than that.
Well, the mentality, Mace, Willie, and Caroline, I mean, I love what Derek said there, because you can see with Jennings, I'm going back and thinking about the moments, right? AJ's a good example, too, like, He's a second round pick, but man, that guy, when the game is on the line, Cedric Tillman wanted the football. Mm-hmm. Think about the game against Pitt, at Pitt. Game's on the line. Football's going to him. And Hyatt, for whatever reason, wasn't all that great. Wasn't a first round pick. Wasn't coming out early until this past season. And he admitted like he just didn't take the game seriously and all that. Tillman's the opposite. And I want that in my locker room, and I want that mentality on the field in the fourth quarter where we need, you know, we're down 7 and we need to go score now. or we're down 10 with 4 minutes to go. We need a score and then an onside kick and get the ball back. Who the ball's going to? It's going to him. He's a guy that you can. He's right, moving different ways, and because of that, he's a chess piece. But he's also a winner, and those are great qualities to have.
Jonathan Hutton, Outkick's Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. Hutton, always appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat with you next week.
Sounds good. And what we have Vanderbilt's own Nate Bargatze. I say Vanderbilt's own massive fan of Vandy. He's coming in studio with us today. Should be fun.
Amazing. We'll be sure to tune in.
Thank you, guys.
Awesome. Thanks, yep. Hutton. Let's get your thoughts on this coming up next. A lot of really good intel and opinions on the upcoming draft potential picks for the Titans from Jonathan Hutton. So we'll get into your thoughts on that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 125, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 125, 106.3 The Game and The Game Nashville app. Always appreciate our weekly visits with Jonathan Hutton. And Predators fans, do not miss tonight's Smashville live show at Brewer House South in Cool Springs starting at 6 o'clock. You can see your Predators star players up close and personal, plus get autographs and pictures. Preds player guests tonight are Mark Jankowski and Philip Tomasino. Smashville Live is brought to you by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Little Harpeth Beer, Superbook Sports, and Dulce Vita Tequila, pure and simple. Also, just a little bit of a note that the Sounds game tonight in Memphis has been postponed to tomorrow, so they'll play a doubleheader tomorrow. Starting at 5:05 p.m., we'll have all of your Sounds coverage on 94.9 The Fan, unless we have thoughts.
Let's go to the phones.
To the phones. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ken in Waverly texts in and says, inside linebacker is a great position to draft if you can pick up a good one. Again, Todd McShay in his most recent mock draft has the Titans taking Drew Sanders, an inside linebacker out of Arkansas, with the 41st pick in the second round. Says, got to remember that that position is also like the quarterback of the defense. If you can grab a smart one, snatch him up. Totally. Absolutely. I mean, you can never have enough good, smart linebackers. However, the point being, if the Titans take Drew Sanders, an inside linebacker at Arkansas in the second round, I don't have a problem with it. It's just stepping away from the first two rounds without filling a position of need at offensive line. That's the thing that bothers me. It's not the pick. It's not taking an inside linebacker. It's not addressing offensive line in the first two rounds. That's the problem for me.
Well, and then again, how do they look at Monty Rice? You know, do they look at him as a ascending player? In their scheme, he played well when he got an opportunity. So, do they see him as more of a guy that already knows the defense? They know what he can do, and they may believe he has the potential at getting better. Now, if you believe that, then are you going to draft an inside backer at the second? You know, with your second pick in the second round. You may, but then again, you may not. So if they did go out and get an inside linebacker with that second pick in the second round, I wouldn't, you know, know it or anything. It'd be, okay, they got a guy they felt they needed, a guy that was at the top of their board, and they couldn't allow him to get past them. You know, if they did pick him, I wouldn't sit here and say, oh, man, that was a horrible pick. No, I think it's a good pick because it's a guy that within if you didn't take it for anything else but depth, then great. Because he's a guy that if you like Monty Rice and Monty Rice needs, you know, they like to rotate those guys anyway. And if Monty Rice needs a couple plays off, well, you can throw that guy in there. And if you're not losing anything by throwing a rookie in there, then draft him because he could potentially end up being your starter years down the line. So I'm not, if they go out and get an inside backer, I'm cool with it.
That's fine.
Exactly.
If they take an edge rusher with the 11th overall pick, I have no problem with that.
Because they rotate those guys. Yeah, and they rotate those guys so much.
Right, and then you have an edge rusher for the future that with the 11th overall pick, a premier pick, that's your guy of the future. And whatever positions they choose to take in the first round, second round, third round, whatever it might be, if you just go by the board, you're going to have a really solid team. But you cannot let the offensive line go ignored. That's what they did last year, and then we saw how that turned out. Speaking of the offensive line, One texter texts in, says they have an offensive line that is more of a pass protection than run blocking. So they're trading Derek to move up, or they're just going to let Derek run into a brick wall. Defenses will attack with a 265-pound center. Well, the Titans didn't have an offensive line that was good at run or pass blocking last year, and Derrick Henry still ran for 1,500 yards.
Exactly. So, I mean, and again, I understand, you know, people pointing to Aaron Brewer and saying he's only 250 pounds, 260, 270, whatever the guy is. He's not 300.
He's not very large.
Yeah, I understand that. But they think – they must think highly of him as a player from a technical standpoint, not necessarily his weight, but from a technical standpoint, what he's able to do. Yes, he needs to put on some more pounds, but they believe from a technique standpoint, he may be the best guy on the offensive line from a technique standpoint. And they may keep him at center and deal with it from that. From that standpoint, because at center, at least you got some help, either from the right guard or the left guard. You're not strictly on an island by yourself, like a left tackle or right tackle. You can have, they can set it up where you have help, you know, at the center position if you get one of those big guys that just want to line up over your head and try to bull rush you. You can get some help, guys chipping and then going to their guy or whatnot. So they can sort of work around that if they wanted to, and I'm sure they will.
Another texter texts in and says, it's awfully hypocritical to say that you don't want to take Jaxon Smith-Njigba at 11 because of an injury history and then take Hendon Hooker. Those are two very different injuries.
But I wouldn't take Hendon Hooker at 11. And Hendon Hooker had ACL, which is not chronic.
That's the thing. Not all injuries are created equal. Mm-hmm. I can right. live with an ACL tear. The Titans drafted Jeffrey Simmons in the first round when he was coming off of an ACL tear. Those things heal. Yes, it takes time. Yes, you might need to ease back into it. But in a hamstring injury, I mean, you could be dealing with that for the rest of your life. Those soft tissue injuries are so pesky. An ACL tear, you get surgery, you heal up, and you can come back 100%. Ryan Tannehill tore his ACL. Jeffrey Simmons tore his ACL. Unfortunately, it happens, but you come back from it.
Yeah, I'm surprised, too, when I see these things in the mock drafts. I don't see, when it comes to the quarterbacks, a lot of the mock draft people in their commentary mention the age part of it either. The other part of the discussion we talked about, the Hendon Hooker, there's the two things. He's older, and he's got the knee injury. And you wonder, if he were a couple years younger and had no ACL tear that he's coming off of, where would he line up with these other guys, right? I mean, there was once upon a time he was draft eligible playing college football at that age, and he wasn't ready to go pro, right? He stayed in college, and he's grown his game since then. So it's just interesting to me. My theme for the day is give yourself a lot of different pathways. Get all the intelligence. But I like the idea of seeing what falls to you. Mm-hmm. I don't like the idea of giving up a lot of assets unless, man, you just fall in love with a player. But none of these guys that we're talking about today, I'm just saying, man, that would be the perfect guy for the Titans. That doesn't mean I know what Rand Carthon likes or anything like that. So I'm content to sit there at 11. If my board says a good player is going to be there at 11, then it's pretty simple. It's not very exciting for talk radio, but I'll take the guy that falls at 11. There's a lot of holes on this team. This is a building team. This team needs to build. They need good players. I'm not that concerned what position they play. I'd love for it to be at a premium position that's harder to find, but give me good football players, right? And, and let me hold on. I want to be gaining draft picks. I don't want to be trading draft picks for the most part.
You just said something interesting about the whole age thing, Willie, and he was draft eligible a few years ago and based upon his age and chose not to do that, which I think is a good thing for college football, and I think it's a good thing for the player. Because just think, if Hendon Hooker comes out, you know, a year earlier and someone drafts him, he's going to sit anyway, and he's sitting without developing as a quarterback. Game time management, game time, things that he needs to learn while playing. well, he was able to do that in college. I would be worried about his age if he played and he showed that he wasn't making any progression in his career. Like if he's just played at 25 and his numbers were mediocre at best, then I would be like, nah, let's pass on this guy. But he showed that he got better. He needed that, what would have been possibly getting drafted in the sixth or seventh round or a free agent and then sitting on the bench and hoping you develop. Well, no, he stayed in college, learned that offense even more, and developed as a passer. Yes, he's a year older, but when he gets in the NFL, he's more ready now. That's why I'm not too much harping on the age, because it was going to be a redshirt. Had he come out early anyway, which I don't think he could have, but if he had come out early anyway, it would have been a redshirt year anyway for him to sit and learn.
But is developing at the college level different than developing on the pro level? I think to some degree it is.
Oh, definitely.
But there's I know I don't remember Hendon Hooker at every stage when he was at Virginia Tech or whatever, right? Why he wasn't starting, all of that stuff. But he clearly has gained stock by, you know, waiting it out, finding the right spot. He wasn't even the starting quarterback at Tennessee. When he first got there, he had to wait his turn there. So it's really a great story. But, you know, you pick up things at college by playing. The reps help a ton. But you're also repping against college defenses, even though it's SEC. It's still a very different thing when you get to the pros. Right? Reps and college. That's why I really feel like there would be such a growth in the position if you could find a minor league, so to speak, which is all pro style, pro coaches, you know, pro players. I think that would help get more quarterbacks ready to play. Yeah, playing in games and not just studying in the film room behind somebody.
Tough thing about that, though, is what does NFL stand for?
Yeah.
Not for long.
Yeah.
So it's almost looking at it like, do I want to spend my years, my young years, where I can make a lot of money and I can show off that I deserve that second contract, but risk an injury at like a minor league? It makes total sense in baseball. You can play baseball till you're 45 years old. That's the tough thing about football is it's a total shot in the dark sometimes in the draft. Will this 20-year-old ultimately get me to the promised land and save me my job? That's a really tough position to be in. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Man, those Predators just continue to be impressive and continue to play tough. Preds get a win last night in overtime against the Vegas Golden Knights, a 3-2 win. We'll see our thoughts on it coming up next. Caroline Relay DeMace, 1025-1063 the game.
Looking back out for Barry. Right circle given back to Barry out high.
Well, they need to get a rotation.
Novak, low left with it. Trying to get his friend and score! Predators win in overtime! 3-2!
How tough is this on all you guys? I mean, you have to win almost every single night out, and these kind of games got to be excruciating, I would think.
Yeah, it's hard, especially going against some tough teams here. You know, we don't have an easy schedule, so we're just trying to take it, you know, one game at a time, one shift at a time, and not look too much into the future.
Predators with a tough, gutsy win last night in overtime over the Vegas Golden Knights, winning that game 3-2. The Vegas Golden Knights come back in the second period, tie game 2-2, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, this is where they start to get things together. This is when they start to figure it out. This is where Vegas pulls away. But the Predators win it in overtime with a Cody Glass game-winning goal in overtime. And I have to give this team credit because yesterday we were talking about it. They had a 1.5% chance of making the playoffs. And looking at the schedule ahead, I thought I don't want to be, you know, Debbie Downer here. Just kind of feels like this is it. And it's still only a 4% chance per MoneyPuck.com. I know different websites give different odds for the Predators to make the playoffs. But every time I want to count this team out, I'm proven wrong. And I think that is valuable in and of itself. It's still a very, very long shot that the Predators make the playoffs, but I have to continue to give this team credit because whenever I'm like, okay, all right, they're done, they pull me back in.
Yeah, this team, I mean, when they went up 2-0, I'm thinking, okay, here we go. This seems like it's going to be a good night. They're going to steal one from the Vegas Knights who, you know, they are a much better team than the Nashville based upon their record. I'm thinking, okay, this is good. And then all of a sudden, Vegas scores two quick goals. And I'm like, oh, here we go again. Here we go. This is where the sort of the team that is much better, they finally figure it out. And they say, we're tired of playing with you young cats. Now we're about to kick it in gear. And now we're about to score goal after goal after goal. After they scored those two goals, it seemed like they clamped down again. Lincoln didn't play great. He was getting pelted on the other end. They made it hard for him. But those young guys fought. And, you know, they had a series. They had a sort of a it was like maybe a minute point in the game in the third period where they were pelting quick with pucks. And they were just going after them, but they couldn't get anything in. And then they go into overtime, and then they get the penalty on Vegas, and they just took full advantage of it. I saw a team that felt like they deserved to win, they wanted to win, and they did whatever it took to make sure they came out of that game victorious.
Yeah, we discussed this a lot yesterday. I still look at it, and they're going to be a big underdog pretty much in every game they play. Now, you're hoping maybe for some good news on Roman Josi tomorrow. We'll see, because I know he's getting close, but you know that would be a huge mental lift, emotional lift to get him back in there. But they've been waiting for over a week now. You just wonder. But without him again last night, you love the fight, right? That, like you said, Derek, in the third period, it's 2-2. Vegas has come back. They feel like they're controlling the game. They're spending a lot of time in Nashville's offensive, in the Nashville zone, right in front of Kevin Lankinen. They're zooming around there. Nashville is on the ropes. Like, you feel like it's a boxer getting, you know, body blows in the corner.
Oh, in a minute, he's going to fall.
Yeah, can he hang in there? But all of a sudden, you know, there was one particular stretch. Igor Afanasyev, I think, broke his stick. He's out there without a stick. And they're just zipping around. They're passing. They're grinding. You're thinking, hold on. Can they hold on? You know, they're zipping shots. Lankinen makes a save. You know, that happened in the third period. In the first period, there was a 5-on-3 where Kevin Gravel blocks a couple shots. Lankinen makes a couple saves, and they hold them off. So those are huge moments. But that's a team that's still fighting, right? Teams that aren't fighting at this stage of the year, they are way more likely to collapse in moments like that. And there's been some games where Nashville just hasn't had enough. That happened in Dallas on Monday, right? They couldn't hang on. They were fighting, but Dallas was just too good. Last night they're fighting. They hang in there. They get to overtime, and they make the play. And who made the plays last night? That's the most encouraging thing going forward.
Tomasino,
Novak, Glass, Evangelista. Those are the guys that are getting to play in these games that mean something and coming through. And that's just a huge boost, a huge growth for them. I thought that was one of Tomasino's best games. Obviously, Novak with the two goals. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. And then Cody Glass, who drafted him? The Vegas Golden Knights. They traded him. They gave up on him. And he's found a new home here. So that had to be pretty satisfying for him.
To your point about Roman Josi, I understand, you know, hey, whenever you can get healthy, you go out there and you help your team. But if we're being realistic, do they look at it like, sure, maybe Josi could go, maybe not, but really, what's the point?
I think if he's ready, I think Roman Josi wants to play. Like, yeah. I think if he's ready, he'll be in there. I think the same is true of all the guys that are injured, especially if you're still in it, if you've got a chance. And I always think everybody thinks of the same thing, right? Dumb and dumber.
Yeah.
So you're telling me there's a chance, right? What did you say?
More like one in a billion.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that, I mean, so it depends on what website you look at, what mathematician, right? Some people say it's 4%. Some people say it's 8%. But here's the real thing, right? A big, big thing happened last night. The Blackhawks beat the Flames. Now, how does that happen? I've been telling you guys, you just never know in this league. The Flames have the easiest schedule of anybody. The Predators have the toughest. Who plays who tonight? Flames play the Jets. Somebody's going to get points. If the Flames get it tonight, which is in Winnipeg, then it really becomes interesting, right? Then you're like, ooh, this, now it's a three-team race for the one spot. And then you have the two head-to-head games, Predators at Jets, Predators at Flames. So to me, and of course you've got this little matchup against the Carolina Hurricanes, who are a tremendous team, first place in their division, a team that's given the Predators fits. So that's another tall order. But if you're mathematically alive and Roman Josi is eligible to play, he gets the green light, I think there's no question. Okay. He'll be in there.
Oh, okay. With that being said, Willie, because you know how sometimes, in Carolina, you know this too, you've been watching sports and participating in sports long enough, and we all have. But is it really that much beneficial for Roman Josi? And I'm only saying this for this reason. Is it that much of a benefit for them to have Roman Josi bet? Because now these guys have settled into their roles. They're used to one another. And it's like, okay, we're going.
Yeah.
And we're not worried about who's injured, who's not. We found our groove. Some nights are better than others, but we found our groove. Now you throw a Josi in there with 3-4 games left. How does that mess up the groove that they're in?
It's a question that it might sound crazy on the surface, but I get your question because they got a chemistry, right? They got an energy in there. But I do think Josi has been a part of the energy. He's been with the team.
Okay.
He's been around, and he's such a game changer. But because I thought about that with some other guys too, like, you know, if they had three guys come back, I think that would sort of change the feel, right? They'd have to adjust to that. But I think it's minimal with Josi, and from what they say, I think he's the only guy that's on the verge of coming back for now. So as far as the odds, if you can look at the odds today, and that's another line I always think of too, Han Solo, never tell me the odds, right? It's low right now, 8-10%. But this is the what if. If you can get on a plane and get to Winnipeg with a chance, and you could win those two head-to-head games, beat Winnipeg, beat the Flames, those odds go shooting up, right? The odds change. And there's a great story. I'd never seen a website like this before. Now there's a dozen of them, right? Money Puck and ESPN had their own. Remember last night, I saw Nick tweeting, where did
Leah Hexel had 9%.
Where did she get 9%? She didn't know where she got 9%. Somebody at ESPN said, hey, they're 9%. ESPN's got their own department, right? Money Puck's got theirs. There used to be a website, and it's still out there, but I don't know if they do hockey anymore. What's it called? I forget it, but Barry Trotz found it. Mm-hmm. It was the year after the team was being sold, 2007. Nashville had a powerful team. Paul Kariya, Peter Forsberg, Thomas Vokoun. But the team got sold. It's a famous story. We thought they might be leaving for Hamilton, Ontario. The local ownership group that still owns the team today rallied, bought the team. We had the big thing over the summer to save the team, and we're hanging in there. But David Poile had to strip the team down to the salary floor. They were signing guys with incentives just to get to the floor, but they still had a chance to make the playoffs with 5 games left. But it looked bad. They were down by 5 points. 5 points with 7 games to go. And they were just the little engine that could. They were kind of like this team. They weren't a loaded team at all. Chris Mason was on this team. We can ask him about it here in a couple minutes. But Barry Trotz found this website, and he said, guys, our chances right now are 5% or 10%. But he said, if we win our games, we will get in. Here are the odds if we win our games. And sure enough, they went 5-1-1 in those last 7 games. They didn't even have to win the last game, and they got in. But it just shows you the odds change. If you're sitting there and resting on, well, we got what happened to the Titans? We were sitting there before they played the Jaguars late in the season. Oh, their odds are 90% that they're still going to get in. Mm-hmm. Well, what happened to that 90%? It
dwindled.
They kept losing, it plummeted. Mm-hmm. So the odds are only that day, right? It's what do you have to do to get in? And my point is, if you can do well against Carolina, which is a tall order, if you could just stay alive until you get on that plane to Winnipeg, you're still in there. It doesn't matter if it's 4%, 11%, 9%, 18%, right? So you got a chance. You're telling me you got a chance. You mean like one in a hundred? No, more like 1 in a million.
1 in a million. Let's see what CMace thinks about it. Chris Mason will join us coming up next.